Here's the tree for the option that's built on top of the asset price tree. This tree is solved by working backwards. Applying the technique of taking the two option values here. So we take this one, we weight it by P, and this one by 1 minus P, discount by R. That gives us this value. Similarly, we get this value by this times P, this times 1 minus P. That gives us this value. Then we take this and multiply this by P, and this add to that this times 1 minus P, divided by the riskless return, and that gives us this value. And we just keep going back until we finally get here. Now, naturally, if you have a 100-step tree, you don't want to be doing this by hand. But this is, of course, what computers are great for. The book compares this technique to the dumb man's approach. What would a dumb man do who was valuing option? He would consider every possibility, no matter how improbable or irrelevant, and look at everything that could possibly happen. So you can think of that's what's happening here. We start here, we go out every possible path till we get to the end of the tree, and we evaluate the option along every possible path. That's what we're really doing in this technique. We might have been able to guess that we really didn't have to pay much attention down here because we're not going to exercise the option. And in fact, what many people have done is they've taken this sort of dumb man's approach and they've written articles trying to make it work faster on a computer by saying, well, you don't really have to look at every node, and there are various tricks to run through the tree faster to calculate the values of options. For many people's purposes, it's fast enough. Even if you have a 100-step tree on this computer, it would probably take a second to get the value of the option. People really used to worry about this about 10 years ago. They don't worry as much about this anymore. Now, let me just say one thing about this transformation up here. If we take this volatility, all I'm going to do is try to transform that into an up and the down move that happened over each period. And the rule that's suggested up here says you take E, which is a number like 2.7, and you raise that to the sigma times the square root of T over N power. So the square root is meant to continue on and go over the N as well. So this is really H. So this is E raised to the sigma square root of h power. Now, does that make a lot of sense? U is approximately equal to 2.7 raised to the sigma times the square root of h power. If you increase the volatility, sigma, what does that do to U? Does it make it bigger or smaller? It makes it bigger. When we increase sigma, it will increase U. Look the way I've defined D. Once you've got U, then D is symmetric. It's equal to 1 over U. What does that mean about D? If U goes up, what happens to D? Down, right. This implies that if we increase the volatility, the way it's going to show up in the binomial model, we're going to have a higher U and a lower D. So U and D will get further apart, which is sort of what we mean by volatility. So that's one good feature of this. Another good feature of it is, what happens if you decrease H? Well, H could be decreased also by increasing N. We could increase the number of steps. So if you took this fixed time period to expiration of the option and had more and more moves over that period, what would you think would happen to the volatility of the underlying asset over each of those moves? It should shrink. That would be our general feeling about it. Actually, wouldn't have to be that way, I think, but that's our general feeling about how most asset markets would work. Is that what's happening here? As H gets smaller, what happens to U? It gets smaller, and it approaches what?
1.
1, right. So as H gets smaller, or equivalently, N goes up, U gets smaller, and it approaches 1, because we begin to raise 2.7 to the 0 power. Anything raised to the 0 power is 1. If U, which starts out, say, much bigger than 1, now is getting closer to 1, D, which started out much less than 1, is now getting closer to 1, but from the other side, from below, and eventually it'll also be equal to 1. So D gets larger, but it doesn't get larger than 1. It approaches 1 from below, this approaches 1 from above. If we decrease H, we want U and D to represent smaller volatility, so they both shrink and get closer to 1. So this particular transformation has these nice properties. Third property is if you do this, you'll get the Black-Scholes formula in the limit as H goes to 0. But that I have to talk about later. Yes?
Isn't the problem with the fact that this transformation, U and D cannot be negative?
Right. That's good, too. U and D can't go negative. I'm happy to add that one. Not only can they not go negative, they can't go to infinity either. Imagine we had a U and a D, and as we made H go smaller, they zoomed off to infinity somehow. That isn't what we would generally think of. as a reasonable process for an asset. And we wouldn't want them to go negative either. U and D are supposed to be 1 plus the returns. Negative would mean we wouldn't have limited liability. It would be possible to lose all your money and more if U and D ever got negative. So we don't want that to happen either.